Years ago, it may have been strange to consider yourself a clinician that only delivers remote classes or hybrid classes and interventions. But recently, this concept has significantly developed with the rise of tele-rehab, specifically in the neurological population. This trend has significantly changed over time. And today we have a chat with a company that focuses on group remote classes. Now, I have a slight bias one way, but you have to listen to find out which way that bias slightly falls. Nevertheless, this is an interesting conversation in the world of tele-rehab and within specifically the neurological population. So let's find out what we have to say and what this company says about the use of this intervention as a viable means of treatment. So bring to you Neuro Heroes. Hello, welcome back to Rook's Health Podcast. Today I have Anna from Neuro Heroes. So Anna, how are you doing today? And would you mind introducing yourself so that the people listening can know who you are and what you do?
Well, firstly, thank you so much for having me. I'm Anna. I'm a neurophysiotherapist and one of the founders alongside my partner, Laura, for Neuro Heroes, which is an online neurological gym for people with Parkinson's or MS and other conditions.
All right. And how I ran into Anna is an interesting story as well. I sent an email. I just reached out because I've been keeping track of Neuro Heroes and the work you guys do, and I found it very interesting for one particular reason, which is one of the key selling points of, you know, Neuro Heroes is you do a lot of group classes, if am I correct in that?
Yeah.
A lot of group classes, and they're not group classes in person. They are remote, you know, group classes online. And for me, that fascinated me and thinking, huh, some people tell me that you can't really do group classes online, or, you know, there are weird caveats to it. But I was wondering, you know, you've been running this for a while now. So how is it possible, you know, how is it possible that it's effective? So the question is, you know, how are you able to, how have you found using these remote group classes on the population that you currently treat?
Well, effectiveness is a great question. It depends what the goal of the classes is.
Yeah.
So the goal of the class is not to take place of one-to-one sessions with a physiotherapist. These classes are all led by physiotherapists. However, the goal of them is to provide the individual with supportive exercise in small classes, which are live. You get real-time feedback. So that you can increase the intensity of your exercise in a supportive way throughout your week. So we look at effectiveness in a different way. You know, the normal view of if a intervention is effective will be an outcome measure at the start, and then you do the intervention and outcome measure at the end. That's that more kind of clinical view. However, Neuro Heroes is trying to bridge that gap between the fitness sector, the personal training, and the more clinical. So we do assessments, we do outcome measures, but we don't measure effectiveness through that. We measure our effectiveness through whether people are enjoying the exercise and carrying on doing it. Are they coming back? Individuals that say that their nurses and consultants have noticed that they're less rigid, they're stronger, or they come back to us and say, oh, actually, I just got on the train and I went down to Cornwall and I've just done this walk that I wanted to do. We feel that group classes are absolutely, if they're done the right way, they can be really effective and they can really help support one-to-one sessions.
Yeah. And is it fair to say, it's an interesting way you look at it, is it fair to say, which is that, you know, group classes may not be for every demographic or everyone. So, you know, roughly how do you determine, or is it purely, you know, someone comes on it with pure interest in joining this group class via, you know, access issues, or they're not in a particular area where they can get to it. So, you know, that's the question I really wonder, and I think a lot of people have, is, you know, some people, it's good for some, it's not good for others. Is there any way you determine this, or is it just you just have to screen to an extent, you know, in terms of whether or not this person would be suitable and still safe doing these group classes?
Got you. First of all, it's horses for courses. Some people like pre-recorded, some people like live classes, some people want to go to the gym, they've got the motivation to do things themselves. So whether online classes are right for the individual comes down to their preferences. From a safety and perspective, and trying to ensure that we are meeting kind of our clinical standards, we have three different levels. Let's take Parkinson's, for instance. We have three different levels. Everybody does an assessment. A specialist neurophysio will look at that assessment and say, okay, based on these outcome measures and these questions that we've asked, that individual will be right for X, Y, and Z class. Okay. And then we give them the opportunity. We say, right, we think this is the right class. We might ask them a few other extra questions. And then they come to a class, and the physiotherapist taking the class will say, actually, I think that person could be pushed harder. Let's up them to the class above. And by doing that, we create a community in those classes of people that are working at similar standards. Doesn't matter about age or location, but it's people that want to exercise and they've got a similar level of condition. And I think that really is much more motivating than just bunching everyone together.
Yeah, that makes sense. Doing levels, and even, you know, in face-to-face group classes, when done correctly or in a systematic way, you will have different levels. Even if, for example, take a hip replacement class or a shoulder repair class, you know, ideally you can have levels. And remember, when I was in university, one of my placements was an MSK outpatient, and even it was all in the same group, but there were levels. It was level 1, 2, 3. So you would partake in X activities when you felt that you were, or when the clinician, which is, again, it's the job of the physiotherapist alongside the patient, you decide, actually, maybe if you're finding these exercises too easy, we might bump you up a level. Or you get to the higher level and you find out, actually, maybe we need to bring you back down because you are not coping well. So you're still using that similar principles, even if it's remote, even if it's group classes virtually, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that helps us from physiotherapists to advance people physically, but also mentally for the individuals. You've just been diagnosed with MS or Parkinson's, and you could go to a group with multiple people at very different levels. Some people can find that quite off-putting. They don't want to potentially confront what might be coming 10 years later, or if they're slightly more advanced, they don't want to be reminded of what they're unable to do. So actually grouping people together for the individual is really motivating, and that we've got a lot of feedback for that, and it creates more of a camaraderie in a community.
Yeah, and it's very interesting you mentioned that, because, you know, so I see certain neurological populations in one of my previous rotations, you know, I would see certain people who were recently diagnosed with, as you mentioned, like MS or Parkinson's, right? And even individuals, and I see in community therapy where I work now, you know, maybe it's been 2 years since the diagnosis or 2 years since, so they're, you know, they're still progressing because it's a progressive disease or a progressive condition, more should I say. Mm-hmm. And one thing I find that people tend to sometimes struggle with is the fact of information, of knowing too much. You know, when they don't always, sometimes people don't want to know too much because it's scary, as you mentioned, where, you know, if you see group classes, and I, interesting you mentioned that, because I've had a patient once and they said they didn't really want to go to group classes because they don't want to know what it's like. They don't want to see someone else at the later stages so they know what's coming to them, what may or may not be about to happen in the future. But some other individuals, you know, they want to do that group class because it provides a level of also like social support. When you can mm-hmm. see other people doing it, it gives like a level of motivation as well, that, okay, you know, they're doing it, I can do it. Obviously, everyone is at different stages, but a little bit of motivation creates an interesting dynamic, isn't it?
Yeah, and those that are less confident of being in that group setting, that's why online really works as well. Because actually, people are seeing me big on the screen, they're pinning me or making sure that I'm big, and everybody else is just like a thumbnail at the top. So, and they're working hard no matter what level they are, and hopefully enjoying it and are engaged. So they're not looking at what everybody else is doing. So for those that are a little bit more apprehensive, actually it works really well to build up confidence. Those that are more confident, maybe at the end will then give more feedback and will give and lead conversations, you know, when we talk after class. So it kind of works for everyone in that way.
Yeah, it works for varying degrees. And obviously, we're talking about the condition specifically. You know, your focus on NeuroHeroes is neurological patients.
Yeah.
As the name would suggest.
Yes.
Why neurological condition? Carry on.
Well, we're neurological physiotherapists. So we both have worked in inner London hospitals for 13 plus years now in the neurological setting. So it's what we do. It's what we know. We know as well that the neurological population, because we have been prescribing exercise in some form or another for individuals. But we know that if left to your own devices, and I'm very guilty of it myself, that people lose motivation. They become uninspired by the six exercises they've been given. There's only so much capacity potentially that they can have within the NHS system, or financially if they're going privately themselves. So it can be tricky to maintain and continue what you need. But in neurological population, we know that exercise is life. Exercise is medicine. People need to know what prescription of medicine they need to be taking, and they need help at times to ensure that that's delivered in the right way. So that's kind of why the neurological population kind of is our kind of target audience, but it's also our passion. You know, if you're passionate about something, I always say people are only going to work as hard as we work. If we're not passionate and motivated on that screen, people are not going to stay engaged on an online exercise class.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
And we are super passionate, so it works that way.
Yeah, I can see. You go on a lot of the conferences as well, and Parkinson's networks to keep on engaging the community. But the nature of the conditions where they are progressive, you know, for example, do you find is there a start-stop point for individuals? Obviously, again, it's personal choice, isn't it? As well, you know, some, I imagine if it's an ongoing thing, some people might want to carry on for, you know, indefinitely, or some may want to within a set period of time. But by the nature of setting up, you know, not all neurological conditions are progressive conditions, you know, but a good chunk of them are, where, you know, you're at Parkinson's, you're MS, you know, there is going to be some level of deterioration, although we know that the movement and medicine and movement exercise will definitely help both current function of activities and what they can do now, as well as support their muscle strength. But at, you know, at the end, it's still a progressive condition, so there will be some level of deterioration. Have you found that any challenges in that respect, where it's working with progressives?
I mean, there's always going to be challenges with working with individuals with progressive conditions. To be honest, we haven't found huge challenges with it yet, because we have three levels. Okay. So, for instance, somebody might actually, you know, have a foot operation, nothing to do with their neurological condition, but by the nature of stress, anxiety, pain, we know that that will make people with MS and Parkinson's have their symptoms, then will become worse in that period of time. So those individuals might go down to the lowest kind of level class and make their way back up to where they were before. So in that respect, if somebody's condition declines for a period of time, then we can adjust it. If the beauty of NeuroHeroes and it being live and you having a specialist neurophysio there is, I could say, you know, client X, I'd do this offline, I'd say, you know, I've noticed that you're a little bit stiffer in that left side. You're not moving as freely. Is there anything going on? And they're able to then say, well, actually, X, Y, or Z. And I can say, maybe it's time to go back and see your neurologist or speak to your nurse about medication changes. So it's actually, we found that through the classes, we're able to signpost people. Okay. And they're getting faster access to healthcare through that. So I suppose you could say that. Yeah. So the lowest level is a chair-based exercise class. So for those that are unable to sit in probably an unsupported position, currently in our current model, we wouldn't be the service for that individual. But if you can sit up in an unsupported way, then I think we have something for you.
Okay. Yeah, which is reasonable. There has to be some level of, you know, floor, you know, if you get what I mean. Some minimum requirements that someone can do.
And I think it's also, you know, we've come across clients with visual difficulties, especially in the Parkinson's Plus population, and that can be really difficult, or some cognitive difficulties and not being able to work the technology. But we don't let that get in our way. The visual is definitely more of a challenge, but there's some great charities out there, EnableNet being one of them, which help people access kind of technology and the net, so we can link people in with charities to help them to be able to access the classes, which is really great.
That was actually going to lead to the next question, the technology side of things, right? You know,
yeah.
With neurological conditions, and as you mentioned, quite a few of them, people are diagnosed at different stages in life. And I've seen people who are diagnosed with MS in their 40s, and you know, some others who are diagnosed with Parkinson's well later in life as well, maybe in their 50s, 60s. But the variety of age, you know, so you might find people, you know, I've seen in my practice where it's younger populations might be, you know, it's a video class, video call, they're not going to struggle at all. Some elder populations, they might find it tricky. There are ways that I've used, there are ways I've used to, you know, to still get them the access, which I'll mention, but I want to hear your thoughts first. How you, when you just mentioned that one where you're using charities, isn't it? Support the elderly population, am I correct? If someone who
is anybody,
it's technical.
Yeah, it's anybody that's struggling to access the web and is becoming isolated as a consequence. Now, we do everything we can first before getting, you know, bombarding charities and doing it for kind of 3 years now, we're able to know quite a lot of the glitches. And you're right, the kind of those individuals with young onset Parkinson's, which we have to remember, young onset Parkinson's, it's not an old person's condition, and it's hitting people in their 30s and below, and so and of course MS as well. They're able to. The older population might be a little not as tech savvy, but might have support from family, friends, and generally it's been okay. You've got some issues potentially about being able to see the whole individual. So we work, if people are struggling, we ask them to come a little bit earlier to class so we can kind of tweak and fine tune what we're seeing so we can see as much of the individual as possible. So there are ways around it to ensure that people can have access.
Yeah, and imagine, so, you know, when you're early, when you first started it, some of these teething issues where there was a curve, I imagine, so where you're having to figure out, you know, what's the best way to modify a little bit. Fine. Yeah, you laugh because I can imagine.
I can just remember right at the beginning taking the classes, and this is before I had like the mic set up, and you know, people enjoyed the classes, but they're like, you do shout, and I was like, well, there's music going and I'm having to be heard and I want people to hear my feedback, and actually it was a big difference when I got the earphones and the setup correct. And so there's processes with any new startup. You know, your processes start a little clunky and they get slicker and slicker, and as your community grows they have to get slicker, but it's a little bit of let's suck it and see how it works.
Which, as I said, I think is reasonable. And as you mentioned, that the ways, you know, the one I've found is using family members is a very, very quick way. If they have the family members available or nearby during the call, do you want to do with people, you know, if it's remote, or a family member just holds a phone or pops the phone up in a nice place. But I also do think sometimes we underestimate certain populations and how well they can use tech. I find people at all different ages, you know, even well into their 60s, 70s, 80s. And I send them the link and they just access the link fairly reasonably.
Absolutely. I think the challenge isn't whether that individual can access it, because generally by the time somebody's kind of sort us out or come through kind of some of the NHS channels that we work with, they're kind of on board with they're going to go on a Zoom call and a class. I think the pandemic massively helped those isolated communities because they had to learn to use this. Though it's, I think the challenge is convincing the certain populations that online exercise is effective.
Yeah, that's fair. It's the narrative, isn't it? It's the wider narrative.
Yeah, you are exactly.
That the that 2020 period did accelerate a lot of things that probably would have taken a longer time to really adopt completely, right?
Think of absolutely.
Practices, think of your MSK services, think of your neuro, as you said, your group classes, your telehealth and telemedicine. Around that period, an influx of, I remember looking at an influx of resources and articles and research papers coming in about the effectiveness of this versus this, the effectiveness on this population, whereas they were not as prevalent prior. They were there in droves, but after that, you know, we really started to look at, okay, how effective is it on certain conditions, isn't it?
Yeah, and it kickstarted us as a population of kind of health professionals to think, well, how can we deliver this differently but be effective? And actually, I went to the World Parkinson's Congress recently, and there were some very interesting talks. And one of the talks was on online delivering online classes. And the individual giving the talk said that actually they're less effective because you can't see the person in kind of 3D. And I have to say, I completely disagree, because actually I'll say to people in the classes, okay, patient, why can you turn side on as you're doing that exercise? So I can see if they're hyperextending. I can see what their technique is when they're doing a squat and a shoulder press or something like that. And I can give that feedback. So I think the effectiveness comes from the experience of the individual in observation skills, in confidence of giving feedback, and confidence of managing kind of that class setting, and kind of juggling quite a few things at the same time.
I imagine so. Which is going to follow up. And obviously, you know, we've mentioned some of the heavy pros and some of the benefits of it. But I assume there are some level of challenges or difficulties that you might face, whereas compared to as I imagine, you know, doing remote classes has its pros against face to face. I imagine as well, face to face also has some pros as opposed to telehealth. Apart from just the technological, and that's an easy one we can pick apart. You know, the technological differences, but we kind of touch on that. Are there any other, you know, would you say any challenges maybe that can be faced or you have found solutions for? Like you just mentioned that one now where someone mentioned that, you know, it's in 2D, you cannot actually see what you mentioned. Yeah, you can actually turn around and see a 3D structure of a person. And, you know, the question then becomes, what more information are you getting if the person was in front of you versus if it's over a Teams meeting? So some of those things, what can you think of? Is there any things you can think of?
I mean, I'm a neurophysio, so I like to get my hands on to the client, and it's just can't do that over virtual. You know, maybe I would like, as somebody's doing a squat, to kind of really kind of like show them, right, this is where you need to squeeze in, or I might use my handling in a way that I can challenge that individual more. However, I think, really good feedback, and if the clients keep coming back to the sessions, then you get to know more and more their movement patterns. So I'll be able to then give more appropriate individualized feedback to people. So that's, I think, really important, taking the time to give that feedback. I suppose you could say this, and a lot of people will say, the safety aspect of it. Yeah. So can you really challenge somebody's balance if you're not there ready to kind of to catch them? But I would kind of caveat that with, I'm not there to catch that individual when they're walking down the street and they're looking left and right because someone shouted their name, and that stimulates their vestibular system and they lose the balance. So what I would say to those in the classes that I already know look a little bit unstable, I'd say, right, okay, I'd like you to go to the corner of your kitchen and I'd like you to do it there. So you will even have the chair in front of you, and you'd be doing this in that safer environment. Or make sure that your sofa's behind you and your chair's in front. So it's all about how you set up your environment. And again, then it comes down to the confidence of the instructor to say, right, okay, stop. Can you please do X and Y to make sure that you are safe?
Yeah. And that, as you said, that safety might be go towards a countertop, a corner, or have maybe a family member present beside you if you feel like, you know, it might be shaky on your feet. And it's slick ways. But I think you mentioned quite a few interesting ones. I mean, me, the ones I can think about that you might argue for, you know, why, you know, they're again, both have their pros and cons. You know, one one a big one I'm ahead of is, you know, for example, like a hybrid version of it. Obviously, Neuro Heroes is primarily fully remote anyways. But if we're talking just slightly off, is that, you know, if you see a patient or you mix in both sessions when opportune, obviously, you know, you might say, okay, you want to read, but that's more of a one-on-one type scenario in certain cases, or, you know, even a group class, and you're able to give physical access to person, because you can't really, there's only so much you can check for, like tone. And as you said, certain other elements you can assess. Like, I mean, the other day I was looking at a patient and I saw clonus on them and I said, oh, that's interesting. You know, someone, a clinician, would be able to know how to roughly check for something like clonus, whereas, you know, family members, you can give them the right instructions to an extent, but, you know, really and truly, those are some hands-on things. But those are more, I think, assessments. And with people with already diagnosed conditions and may have gone through certain elements of the healthcare system before getting to you, that level may not be as relevant at the time, or what they're coming in for a group class for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And actually, we're doing a hybrid model with an NHS trust at the moment, the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery. So they see the client, they assess the client, and then they can, if they're appropriate, come and do six hours of sessions with us, and then they get reviewed again by the therapist within the hospital. So they get the hands-on, but they also get the class with us. But if we look at increased tone, if we look at if it's quite severe, then it's obvious. We can see through their movement patterns that it's tone. But if it's quite mild, or even if it's mild or severe, what's our treatment for it? It's weight bearing, it's stretching, it's movement, it's strengthening. So you're right that actually we ask questions to ensure what the people's goals are and what they feel the main problems are. But our classes are based on the national guidelines for exercise for MS and Parkinson's. Yeah. So it works on those kind of impairment level. But we don't tell our clients we're working on this impairment level now, because actually people want to come to a space and they want to exercise like they don't have a neurological condition. That's in inverted brackets normally. But they need support from a specialist neurophysiotherapist or a specialist physiotherapist. So we don't like going down that impairment route, because it's a lifestyle brand. And actually people are much more engaged. How many people go into that clinical setting and kind of seize up and feel kind of quite stressed, and they have to get to that hospital appointment, whereby what we're trying to do is have physiotherapists leading it, but it's as I said, a lifestyle brand.
Which is a fair point in terms of what you're assessing to treat, and obviously as that model where, you know, someone might get seen, but you did kind of mention a potential solution is signposting. You know, when you feel someone might need signposting, right? If you're looking actually something doesn't look right here, or when last did you have a review by your neurologist, or when last have you actually seen someone? And obviously if they're not getting to you, or they're not in the, you know, you're working with a trust now, for example, if you're not, you know, not, you might say you might want to go back to your GP, or you might want to go back to someone else. And obviously if they don't have any contact from any healthcare professional, you've then potentially supported them in their rehab process,
or
their
management process. Now, we don't do it for absolutely everyone, because we can't, or it's not necessary. But for instance, one hero of ours had a couple of falls. And so I spoke to her Parkinson's nurse, and she then got seen the next week. And then an implementation of a neurophysio that was going to go and see her to do a falls assessment. So it kind of really kind of helped get seen quicker and faster. And as you said, trying to just make sure that people know what's available to them. So individuals, you know, we have had one individual who I just kept getting saying, I can't come today. I've got another chest infection. So, you know, through email, we're saying, you know, are you choking on your food? What's happening here? And we managed, we suggested to the GP that she had a speech and language therapy review. So, you know, our responsibility, we have a clinical responsibility as physiotherapists to ensure the safety of our clients. And we ensure that we refer them on where needed.
Yeah, it's very, very, very interesting dynamic. And the very, very nature of it is, I think, something that, you know, might find level of difficulty in hybrid. One reason I like community, you know, working in the community is that, as you mentioned, in someone's home environment, you know, going into someone's house, they feel a lot more comfortable. You know, I might see someone who's just come out the hospital. This is slightly off topic as well, but I might see someone who's come out the hospital and they've been there for a long while and now they're home. So they are, they can engage in a therapy in their own environment, right? You know, I'm giving you exercises in your own home environment. I'm more doing certain things. Okay, I'm saying, you know, you can tie this around here or you can do this, or we're doing a video called in your own house. So you don't have to go anywhere particularly. You can just do the physio rehabilitation or the management plan within your own comfort setting. And considering the fact I've worked in different places as well, for some populations, some people like to go into a clinic, because I used to work in MSK. Some people like it, you know, they want to see you do, you know, if it's a tenopathy, you're rehabbing for someone, for example, you're doing that in them and they're seeing you and they respond to that. Some others, they might not respond as much, but if you're in the home environment as well, their responses are different. But again, it's up to the clinician and the physiotherapist's choice to kind of, it's our job to investigate which one you think would be even more appropriate for someone, isn't it? And what they might respond to via communications.
Yeah. And I think your final point there of it's our responsibility to give the individual the information, say, this is what's out there. Yeah. This is what I think would be good for you. But actually, you've just told me that actually you really feel a bit isolated at home. So I think actually a face-to-face class would be better for you. Or you've told me that you don't have a car at the moment and it's winter, so it's icy, you're worried about falling over, home therapy is better. And it's our responsibility as therapists to empower people to make the changes to them, to their health themselves. They're going to have much longer success if we do that, and they're going to keep coming back. So I think it's the home rehab will and virtual rehab works for a lot of people. For some people, they'll want to be out of the house. And I think I say to most people, even if you're not going to a class, then we will give people advice on what kind of things they need to be doing outside of the home.
It's just mentioning a few of these things. This takes me, I know when you start having like memories of certain people in your head, when someone said this and someone said this, and I remember someone telling me, you know, I was going out to see them in community and we're doing rehab on them, and the daughter and them was like, I think I would benefit from going to a clinic because they just wanted to leave the house. And I was like, you know what? If you can make it to the clinic, actually, I'm not even supposed to be seeing you in theory. So you go send him off to an MSK clinic or send him off to a walk-a clinic where they can go out some level of social engagement. But then there are others who have, I forget the specific term, when, you know, someone doesn't like to leave their house and
I want to say it's agoraphobic. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but that specific condition where people don't like to leave the house. So, you know, you still have to find a way to engage them in some level of therapy, especially if they need it particularly. So that type of population might not be as fast.
Absolutely. So you've got people that are maybe more isolated, as you said, those maybe more agoraphobic individuals, but you've also got people that are working from home. I say, exercise is medicine. They need to be taking their medicine every single day. So if they can stop at lunchtime, do a quick session, then go back to work, and they don't have to have the 20, 30 minute bus route to the gym and back, then they're suddenly being able to do their exercise throughout the day. They become more compliant with doing it. And that's a real pull. Or people with a young onset Parkinson's or MS who have a family to look after, and maybe another individual can look after the kids or get people ready for school whilst they do their early morning exercise. So I think it depends on lifestyle and people's yeah. choices of lifestyle. And what we've tried to do with NeuroHeroes is, I mean, we started with 2 classes a week and we've now got 17 classes a week. So, that ranges from condition specific classes to seated yoga, Pilates, strength and conditioning, functional strength, circuits, fit classes. And what we're trying to create is a little bit of something for everyone. So it's, as I said, it's horses for courses yeah. and trying to see if we can make sure that we hit as many people's needs as possible.
Yeah. And we've got a few more minutes and very interesting. So which brings us to the question which normally people ask at the beginning, but I've chosen to ask it at the end. What's the inception? How was the inception of NeuroHeroes? How did that go? I know you had a quick chat off time. You know, you started in the pandemic. How has it been since the start? How was it created and how has it been till now? How have you found it? Obviously, you're growing, which is obviously good yeah. design for you, but how was it?
So it started, as I say, myself and Laura. Actually, I just coming back from maternity leave, Laura just going on maternity leave. It's during the pandemic. And we just saw that there was a real decline in people's access to specialist physios or healthcare providers, personal trainers. People couldn't go to gyms. Clinics, as you say, were more focused online. Yeah. However, there's just a humongous backlog of clients waiting. So NeuroHeroes was set up. Also NeuroHeroes, one of our big kind of selling points is that we engaging, fun, enjoyable exercise that's going to make you work hard. And we felt at the time, if we reflected back on our kind of clinical journey, that we weren't, as physiotherapists, we weren't pushing people hard enough. And there was this gap between a personal trainer and a physio, and we wanted to bridge that gap. So NeuroHeroes was started, and primarily to start with for the Parkinson's population, but we soon quickly grew into MS. And then, as I say, in 2 years now, 2.5 years, we won a Parkinson's UK Excellence Award. We're now partnered with Parkinson's UK. We deliver classes for MS society groups, for the NHS. We have 15 members of staff that take classes and help behind the scenes. So it's been a humongous like learning curve.
Yeah.
And it's been really fantastic to do that. One thing that's really big that I'd like to tell you about, Farouk, is one thing we did note is that it was really difficult to access or ensure that the quality and diversity and access those that really, really needed it. So we started up a community exercise fund, a healthy pot of money that we have, which we can help subsidize people's classes or even give people a free block of 6 classes if they're on certain credit systems, unable to afford it, if people are socially isolated or just unable to access therapy for a particular reason. So that's been a big project, which we hope will improve inclusivity.
Oh, that's quite good, actually. That's quite interesting that that still came into the thought process of as the business is growing as well, that you decided to consider that aspect as well. And
we're a private company with a conscience. So that's really important to make sure. We want exercise to yeah. be as affordable as possible. And so ensuring that we've got grant systems and funds for those that can't afford to do it is vital.
Yeah, I like that. Private company with a conscience. That sounds like major corporations, the tagline, they say, they have a conscience. But then
we are. I mean, we grew up within the NHS systems, didn't we? So we're wanting to collaborate and to ensure that if everybody could have it free, that would be fantastic. We just need to work out how we can do that.
In a perfect world, exactly. No one would.
If anyone can do it, we will do it. Just bear with us. It takes time.
No. I honestly, I appreciate it. It's very, very refreshing conversation and very interesting in understanding the dynamics of the niche-ish market that you're in now, which I say is kind of niche-ish just because of that remote telemedicine aspect is still certainly novelish to certain groups of individuals, but you guys have kind of then grabbed onto it and expanding it wider. You probably will find followers in suits of the type of work you do. Didn't you think? Can you tell us more about the community fund you were talking about just briefly? I think I cut you off slightly on there.
No problem. Yeah, I'd love to. So the Community Exercise Fund was set up in partnership with Parkinson's UK with a goal to trying to reach out to underserved communities to improve the access to the classes and to access to physiotherapists through the live classes that we're offering. So for people to join and join our classes through the fund, they have to meet a certain criteria. Now, this is a work in progress. We're looking to in this pilot of the next kind of 6 months, see how we can reach individuals and change it. But currently, it's if people are on pension credit or universal credit systems, which we know isn't ideal, but is what we have for now, or those that have applied for those systems just been unsuccessful. And then the other criteria that people can access the fund through is if you've had a referral from a healthcare professional. So that healthcare professional has identified that maybe you're not on these credit systems, but actually, you know, the cost of living crisis is hitting everyone. Okay. And if that healthcare professional feels that person isn't able to afford the classes, they can refer them. If they feel that from maybe a cultural or religious reason, they're not used to being able to access this kind of healthcare and they just need a bit of support in doing so, then those individuals as well could access the fund through a referral through a healthcare professional. We're also looking, and you know, if anybody is listening, I'd welcome you to get in touch for healthcare professionals around the country who want to help spread the word via a pilot. We're wanting to give a few packages of six classes to healthcare professionals so that they have the choice and they have the autonomy to say, okay, patient X, I think you'd be really good for this. You know, contact NeuroHeroes and they'll sort out the rest and you can have six sessions for free. Currently, how it works is an individual will pay £15 and they'll get the 6 hours of classes. After that time, we've done some work with Parkinson's UK on some exercise, pre-recorded exercise videos, which people have access to. And we signpost people to other kind of services that might be right for them. But as we can do more fundraising, the pot of money gets bigger, the fund gets bigger, we can offer people more sessions at this subsidized or free rate. So it's really exciting and it's trying to really get to those underserved communities, which is can be quite difficult and can be quite isolating for them.
Okay. So I see what you mean. So let's say take myself, you know, as a clinician in private practice or wherever I'm mm-hmm. and I identify a patient, you know, one of my patients, I find that they probably might benefit from both this neuro group classes, but they're also fall into that category of, as you mentioned, maybe they just can't afford the full price, or they are, it's very difficult, as you said, cost of living is hitting them, or they, you know, they're on a certain pension plan or benefits. What do I do to, in order to get them onto that program? Do I contact NeuroHeroes directly? Do I send a referral? What happens next?
So on our website, www.neuroheroes.co.uk, you've got a page dedicated to the fund, and there's a referral form there. And we just ask any healthcare professionals to make sure they you know, do their due diligence and check that individual, you know, is in that difficult situation and refers them on. And I think we know as physios and as OTs and nurses, that consultants, that we through our questioning we know whether somebody is struggling, and I think that they're the kind of they're the people that we need to be reaching out to and supporting.
But as you said, there are other criteria, but I think that one, you know, naturally as a physio, as you're chatting with someone, you can, what our job is to do is investigate, isn't it? We have all the sort of flagging systems, our yellows and orange flag. You start to pick up certain elements, and when someone is telling you, and you know, for me as a home physiotherapist, and I go out to see someone's home, you know, people are a bit more open and they share certain things with you, so you can kind of get a better picture. But as you said, there are other methods, and that's quite interesting rationale, the fund idea. And last thing I wanted to ask is, why you know, you kind of think you kind of touched on it prior, you know, why was that important to you to create this fund?
It's important that we're as inclusive as possible. Mm. We want people to have access to excellent therapy, excellent classes, in an engaging, fun way. Mm. And but not everybody is able to afford to self-fund. So in order to be inclusive, we needed to find other ways. And the other ways is working with NHS trusts, working with charities, setting up a fund so that we are able to subsidize people's classes and give grants out.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Anna, for your time as well. Again, have a lovely day.
Thank you so much.